Para kepala daerah saya minta tidak membuat kebijakan sendiri-sendiri yang tidak terkoordinasi. Semua kebijakan di daerah.
Since the pandemic began, we've seen local governments attempting to implement their own lockdowns or testing policies, only to have such moves intervene by the central government. This happened, for example, in Jakarta when Governor Anies Baswedan tried to implement social restrictions but then was blocked.
Untuk memperlakukan karantina wilayah di Jakarta ditolak pemerintah pusat.
We saw hashtags trending on social media such as Indonesia lockdown please. The city of Tegal in central Java, Makassar in Sulawesi, and others implemented their own regional lockdowns only to face threats of administrative sanctions from the Widodo administration if the lockdowns were not lifted.
Lockdown adalah kebijakan pemerintah pusat.
Now the central government has the authority to order lockdowns. The local governments do not, according to the law. Anies just yesterday said
Jakarta mengalami lonjakan kasus tertinggi.
Jakarta has a new record high of COVID-19 cases and is considering pulling back on the transition, returning once again to large-scale restrictions or PSBB, which is in the opposite direction of the central government. So it looks like there could be another disagreement here between the central and local governments.
Dalam rapat ini, Partai Golkar sepakat dengan dihidupkannya kembali GPHN sebagai panduan arah pembangunan nasional.
Prior to the pandemic, there has been a push by the top parties, Golkar, Gerindra, and others, to pull back on decentralization and bring more power to the central government. What impact has this battle during the COVID-19 crisis had on the push to pull back on decentralization?
I think at the political level, there is no such significant impact yet of this pandemic to the way the central and local government relationship is done in Indonesia. The formal regulation is still the same like before the pandemics, and also the practice.
That's Dr. Jayadi Hanan, the Director of Political Science at Paramadina University here in Jakarta. He is also the Executive Director of Lembaga Survey Indonesia, or LSI.
And I think the fact that this pandemic is so huge, making the central government actually cannot deal with it alone. Because of that, then, as you see, if you are following Indonesian news closely on this issue, that a lot of things are being actually, although not very well managed, that a lot of authorities are actually decentralized to the local government.
This is Indonesia In Depth with Sean Corrigan. Can you talk about the government's hesitance to implement a lockdown for the capital and for other COVID-19 hotspots? Why was this the case?
You know, when the request or the demand for locking down was there at the beginning of this pandemic in Indonesia, that is between early March all the way to, let's say, early April or the end of March, the central government hesitance or reluctance to choose the measure of locking down is largely because of the incapability of the government to burden all the responsibilities of doing locking down. In Indonesian law, which is called the law on quarantining, when there is an emergency or a situation like pandemic, we have a kind of a lockdown, which is called territorial quarantine. This is actually the same as the lockdown that was conducted in some areas like in Wuhan or in Italy and so on and so forth. But the consequence of doing this kind of policy is that the central government has the authorities to order this lockdown, this territorial quarantine, but at the same time, the local government has all the responsibilities to make sure that all of the people, all of the, not only human, not only people, but also the livestock, they are all must be If they need food, must be provided by the government. If they need medicine, must be provided by the central government. And the government, the central government does not have that capacity to do so. That is the biggest reason why the central government was very reluctant to take the measure of locking down. Yeah. As a result, then you have mentioned in your question, in your introduction, that Indonesian government opted the measure of the so-called large social restriction, or PSBB in Indonesian term, because by doing so, the central government can authorize the PSBB or the large scale social restriction program, but the one who needs to request that is the local government, the one who will deal with most of the consequences, like the providing food or providing the assistance to the needy and so on and so forth, will be not only the central government, but many of the consequences of that will be on the burden of local government. So in a way, this pandemic and the measures that was taken by the central government or the government in general, including the local government, shows the weakness of the central government. And therefore, I don't think it's strengthened the centralization in that way. Yeah, because the central government now said, you, the local government, must take responsibilities on many issues. Of course, the central government provided some money, there is around more than 400 trillion rupiah, but all of those are not enough to deal with all of the problems all over Indonesia. As a result, the central government must be creative, must be able to take their own initiative in taking the measures that will be having burden on themselves, like you mentioned in your introduction, like Tegal.
Pemirsa, Wali Kota Tegal, Dedi Yon Supriyono, memutuskan untuk mengambil kebijakan local lockdown dengan menutup akses keluar masuk kota selama 4 bulan ke depan. Langkah kontroversial Dedi itu.
There is no lockdown measures in terms of the central government policies, but local areas like the Regency of Tegal took its own initiative.
Local lockdown akan diberlakukan mulai tanggal 30 Maret mendatang hingga 30 Juli 2020. Menurut Dedi, warga harus bisa memahami
some other areas also took their own local initiative, like Semarang. They have their own local initiative, and of course because it is local initiative, then they have their own responsibilities to do so. So I think in a way this pandemic, as far as the issue is, the biggest issues related to this pandemic is, now number one is medical issues, right? And number two is economy. So in these two areas, now the central government shows its weaknesses. And in these two issues, I think the central government must be working more closely with the local government. Otherwise, they will have some problems. For instance, in one of the biggest program, because as the consequences of the large-scale social restriction program, is that a lot of people must be staying home. A lot of people must be having no jobs, right? Because they have to be away from their own daily work. And for that, the government must provide the so-called social assistance program. And the social assistance program is actually a joint program, both in terms of the delivery and also in terms of the funding from the central government and the local government. And it's not easy to manage because there is some dispute in terms of the data and also in terms of how and when they have to deliver the social assistance program. So if you have been following so closely also, for instance, there was a kind of dispute between the central government and Jakarta's provincial government about how many households must be the responsibility of the provincial government in terms of the delivery of social assistance, and how many households must be the responsibility of the central government. Yeah. So I don't think that this pandemic so far is strengthening the centralization. Because of that, I don't think that the central government, he has more legitimacy, more political power to take back the power that has been decentralized. And if we are following the polls about how the public views on the way the governments, both central and local government, in dealing with this pandemic, you will see that the number for central government, positive number for central government, is less or lower than the positive number for the local government. So if we ask people in Indonesia in general, are you satisfied or dissatisfied with the way the central government is dealing with this pandemic? The people who said they are satisfied is still more than 50% for central government. But if we compare that to the local government, like public views on how West Java government is dealing with this issue compared to Jakarta's government, compared to, you know, East Java, Central Java, and other local governments, the positive number for the local government is higher than for the central government. That means that people are seeing that the local government is more important, better in terms of dealing with this issue. So counting that in mind, we cannot say that the government, the central government now, or the other, let's say, political parties who are aspiring for re-centralizing the power into the central government, now they don't have strong ground to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of this pandemic.
And so you see the moves in parliament, which started quite strong, you know, in this new parliament back late last year. There was a push, you know, with the GBHN and these other things to really, you know, increase.
All of those issues have been fading away now. The government now must deal with the public that says, who said that the government and also the parliament must prioritize the laws or the bills that are directly related to the crisis, meaning this issue of pandemic and also economy.
Di dalam negeri, Saudara Ketua DPR Puan Maharani menilai DPR tidak perlu terburu-buru menyelesaikan Omnibus Law Cipta Kerja karena masih dibutuhkan sosialisasi ke berbagai elemen masyarakat. Sebelumnya Presiden Joko Widodo meminta DPR untuk menyelesaikan Omnibus Law paling lambat 100 hari.
Mau lebih cepat dari 100 hari, DPR kerjain juga kok, akan kita laksanakan, hanya bermanfaat nggak buat masyarakat. Nah ini, jadi
there is a debate about whether or not the government must continue finishing the bill on the so-called job creation bill.
Omnibus law.
Or omnibus law. And also some other law like the criminal code and so on and so forth. There's a debate about that. But the frame so far is that the public wants the government to prioritize all of the necessary policies and laws or bills that are directly related to this COVID-19 crisis.
Yeah, but will that happen? I mean, you said that the people want that to happen. Will that happen, or will the parliament continue on its separate agenda?
One is that in terms of the central government, the demand for having a response to the crisis is there, right? The government has issued the so-called the government regulation in lieu of law that provide the measures and the funding for dealing with this COVID-19, it was approved by the parliament just a few, let's say, some weeks or 1 or 2 months or so ago. So it's number one. Now I think the government is really wanting to move on with the Omnibus Law.
Di tengah ancaman pandemi, masa pengunjuk rasa penolakan rancangan undang-undang Omnibus Law berkumpul di depan gedung DPR.
Unjuk rasa ini terjadi di tengah ancaman pandemi. Seperti apa situasi dan juga pengamanan unjuk
But,
rasa di luar?
The question is, can the government convince the public that this Omnibus Law is really needed by Indonesia right now for dealing with this crisis in the short term and also in the long term, in middle and long term? I think the debate is still going on. And I think the government is now trying very hard, including the parliament, trying very hard to convince people on that this job creation law, this omnibus law, is not only for long term, but also for immediate term, particularly for recovering Indonesian economy because of being crashed by this pandemic. And to do that, I think the government must take up some of the elements of the law, like the one that is protested very much by the workers.
Workers union,
By workers union. Like they said that their rights has been cut off in many ways by this new bill for the sake of prioritizing the business people and so on and so forth. So the issue of, let's say, minimum wage, I think, should be dealt better by the government. Otherwise, this kind of bill will not mm-hmm. be moving on.
And this is a government-initiated bill in Parliament. If you had a guess right now, would that bill be passed this year?
I think, yeah. I think looking at the way the government is trying very hard to do so, I think it will be passed this year, so which means it will be around 6 more months, right? I think that's enough time. But I don't think it will be, the bill will be as much as the government and the parliament planned before.
Yeah, so it'll be toned down a bit.
Right, right. So I think the public will be easily convinced the regulations on, let's say, shortening the process of getting the license for business.
Yeah.
Particularly for, let's say, small and medium enterprise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That will be okay, I think, for the public. But reducing the cost of production, for instance, by reducing the salary or the management of the workers and so on and so will not be easily accepted by the public, especially the workers' union. Yeah. So I think the government also needs to involve more stakeholders, because there was and there is accusation that this bill was drafted mainly by the business people, right? So that kind of issues must be dealt with by the parliament and also the government. But I don't think we see a kind of halt. The government does not halt this process. It is underway until now. And part of the government's way to do so is by involving more public opinion makers or more public activists to be more aware of the ABC of this bill.
Yeah, so they'll have to do more PR than they even planned from before. Right.
Adaptasi kebiasaan baru.
Gubernur Jawa Barat Ridwan Kamil mengklaim laju kasus positif COVID-19 di Jawa Barat masih terkendali meskipun muncul beberapa klaster baru di lembaga pendidikan negara.
Pak, you mentioned Governor Ridwan Kamil, mm-hmm. West Java. He's mm-hmm. the governor of West Java, which is the country's largest province with over 50 million residents. His government appears to have slowed the spread of COVID-19 as of today. His government will also ramp up testing and also improve contact tracing, which is very important. His government has been the most effective in the country when it comes to handling the pandemic. Mm-hmm. What impact do you think this will have on his future political aspirations? You know, even perhaps a run in for presidency in 2024.
Well, Ridwan Kamil, as a governor and also a national figure in Indonesia, has got the positive effect mm-hmm. or positive impact because of the way he is handling this COVID-19 crisis. At least in the media, we see that, as you mentioned, the figure for West Java is much, much better than, let's say, compared to East Java, right? East Java is still considered as a disaster right now. And the political impact for Ridwan Kamil as the aspirant for 2024 election has been positive. For instance, some polls that came out by the end of May and June, and on the months of June.
So in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah, in the middle of the pandemic, some polls from some credible pollsters find that his number is up a bit. Yeah. For instance, one pollster find that the number of Ridwan Kamil has been jumping up from only 3-4% in before the pandemic, now has been around 7-10%, which is a double kind of jump up. On the other hand, the number for Governor Anies has been a bit up and down, but rather stable at the level of 10% compared to others. So I think this COVID-19 management by the local government can boost the political or positive political impact to them. In this case, the one that has got it is Ridwan Kamil. I think Ganjar Pranowo in Central Java also, in a way, got positive impact because Central Java is not as bad as East Java or Jakarta in terms of dealing with this COVID-19 crisis, in terms of the number of the affected people in those areas. So yeah, I think all of the political figures, including the local government's leadership, will get better political boost whenever they are dealing with this crisis and viewed positively by the public. But of course, whether or not it will be lasting until 2024 is still a long way to go. Yeah, it depends on how long this pandemic will be staying with us. We consider it will be staying here for long. And also, you know, it's not easy to maintain a stable response to this kind of pandemic. Because a very complete issue, especially between the health issue or medical issue against economic issues. Both do not always go hand in hand. For instance, now, although the infected cases or the positive case in Indonesia actually is still going up and up, yeah, in many ways, but there is a very strong pressures and demands to open up the economy, you know, to the extent that people said we have only two options or choices. Are you going to be die because of the pandemic, or are you going to be die by because of hunger? Hunger means you don't have economic activities. So being posed by two options, the public chose, most of the public, majority of the public chose being died because of the pandemic. Right, meaning that it is better for them to go out there, having economic activities, regaining their purchasing power again, their money, so that they can live. While in the middle of the way they have to be infected by the pandemic, by the COVID-19, it's okay with them. So how the government is dealing with this is not easy. And there, this local leadership will be tested.
Yeah. So people will take their risks.
Mm-hmm.
Ya, tidak ada hal yang sempurna.
Talking about, you know, political leaders, how has the pandemic affected President Widodo from his reputation, political capital, and even, of course, his plans.
Yeah. Interestingly, if you are following most of the polls, that not many polls came out during this pandemic, right? Actually, not many national polls out there, but there are some. We see that the approval rating of the president has been going down a little bit, but not to the extent that we can say it is plummeting. It is still at the level of 60%, 65%. But surely it is going down compared to the situation before the pandemic.
Was it around 70 before?
Yeah, before. Yeah. The Jokowi's approval rating has always been around 70. Well, there is a reason for that, yeah? Because the polls during the pandemic also find that Indonesian people are still polarized because of 2019 election. Despite the fact that the opponent of Jokowi has been in his team, but the people who are against or the non-voters of Jokowi are still there. So at least around 25 to 30% of them will always say they are not satisfied with the government no matter what. But the fact that the approval rating of Jokowi has been going down around 5% from around 70 to around 65, meaning that this pandemic has been putting an impact on his popularity, his political asset. So the pandemic has been decreasing his political popularity, although a bit. And I think why it is only a bit, part of the reason is because of the polarizations among Indonesian voters. If Indonesian voters are not so polarized, I think it could be that his popularity has been going down even more. So if you look at the numbers in the polls also, there is a kind of partisanship bias or partisanship divide in terms of giving positive or negative number to Widodo. But I would say that Jokowi's performance, Jokowi's approval rating has been decreasing, and that means there is a negative effect of this pandemic. And that makes sense, you know? That makes sense. Why? Because if you look at the number, the positive number of how the public views the central government is dealing with this issue, the number of the people who are satisfied with the way the central government handling this issue is only around 50 something, not even 60%. Yeah, the number will be much lower in the polls if we ask people about their satisfaction with the way the Jokowi's cabinet, particularly some ministers who are directly responsible for dealing with this crisis, like Minister of Finance, Minister of Health, Minister of Social, what is it called? Minister of Social Welfare, and so on and so forth. Minister of Agriculture, they all got not so good number. So there is a sign that this pandemic has been viewed, has been putting the government in a hot seat, resulting in the negative or more negative evaluation by the public.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And I think another reason is that the polls number also find that in May, let's say, more than 80% of the public said that economy is bad.
This was in May.
Yeah, it was in May. The end of May, I guess, and early June. Some polls, yeah, not LSI, but some others. I'm talking about the poll numbers on average. More than 80% of the public said that their economy in their household and also the national economy is bad. And almost also around 80% of the people said their income has been decreasing so much to the extent that some people said they have only some sort of money to live only around 1 week from when they are asking in the surveys. Some also said that they have only money for living for only 1 or 2 days. So you see, the level of sufferings is quite deep. Therefore, I think the public evaluations on the government is decreasing. But of course, you will have a question, why the approval rating is still 60, right? Why not below 50? You know, I think the public knows that it's not all the fault of the government, right? The crisis is not because of the government took disastrous policies in the first place, but because of the pandemic. So I think in that sense, the public seems to me are still rational in looking at this issue and the consequences of this pandemic. But I think if the government is not dealing with these economic issues and also the medical issues quite well, then there is a reason to believe that the public will in the end put the blame on the government in general.
Saya lihat masih banyak kita ini yang seperti biasa-biasa saja. Ini apa enggak punya perasaan? Suasana krisis ini extraordinary. Duit rupiah pun belum masuk ke stimulus ekonomi kita. Ini extraordinary. Saya harus ngomong apa adanya, nggak ada progres. Ini extraordinary. Langkah apapun yang extraordinary akan saya lakukan. Bisa aja membubarkan lembaga, bisa aja reshuffle. Ini extraordinary. Udah kepikiran kemana-mana saya. Ini extraordinary.
Speaking of blame on the government, in late June, the presidential secretariat published a video of a cabinet meeting from mid-June where the president expressed anger and disappointment to his cabinet for not having this sense of crisis or sense of urgency when it comes to battling the pandemic. particularly with regards to the presidential decree number 1/2020, which was issued in March, which laid out the new programs and policies in wake of COVID-19. Widodo said that he would replace ministers if need be. Some critics have said that he should have replaced several ministers even before this for their poor performance. But now, this week here, it seems that the palace now is downplaying potential cabinet reshuffle.
Mm-hmm.
What's behind this video, which is actually not common to see?
Right.
What's the reasoning behind the releasing of this video?
So I think there are at least 3 or 4 reasons for that, yeah? For why the government is releasing this video. You know, the video was released only around 10 days after it was happening, right? So there was, of course, political reasons for that. Number one, I think, as I have mentioned before, that people are disappointing. In a way, people are also hopeless, right? In terms of economy, as well as in terms of the issue, medical issues. On medical issues, for instance, there is no sign of this COVID-19 is decreasing in terms of the number of people who are infected and also in terms of the number of people who are fatally affected. I mean, the number of people who dies because of this, right? So it's day by day is increasing. At the same time, people are feeling about the hard problem economically. They lost their job. They have to think about their not only how they put the food on the table and also how they deal with the education for their children and so, and also how they have to deal with the health issues outside of the COVID-19 issues and so on and so forth. So, you know, in that kind of situation, people are expecting the government to act decisively, to act with good policies that can put better hope in front of the public, right? But as I mentioned, all the numbers are saying that we are not in a good situation, both economy and also medical or health issues. Then it is easy for the public to say the government the government are doing nothing, right? The release of this video by the palace, by Jokowi's team, I think is a way of communicating with the public, saying to the public, look, we are doing things very hard. At least the president is trying to do everything very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the public knows that the president has released the policies that you mentioned, the government regulation in lieu of law number 2/2020, right? About the funding and also the measures that must be taken for dealing with the crisis. But after, you know, that big policy, that umbrella policy was taken by the end of March, right?
Yes.
Now it's June. It's been almost 4 months or more than 3 months. The people do not see good signs yet. Then the question is, what happened, right? I think by sending out this video to the public intentionally, I think the palace would like to say, we have been trying very hard. The president is trying very hard. But you see, the president has the problem with his own team. The teams are not working properly, right? That is number one. So at least I think the public will not blame directly to the mm-hmm. president.
So keeping sort of a buffer or distance between the president and then his cabinet's
exactly.
performance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, there is a risk, right, of doing that kind of strategy of communication. The risk is that the people will say, how comes? The cabinet is under your authority. If they are not acting, that means you are not doing good leadership, right? That is the risk. But at least the president teams think, I guess, that the public will understand that the president has very difficult challenges, particularly dealing with his own cabinet. And there is a reason for that, because the team of the president can think of is that the ministers are not all the choice of the president. The ministers are, many of them, or maybe mostly of them, are the choice of the political parties. So by doing so, the president will put also the burden on the minister.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one, I think, yeah? Sending the message to the public.
But has that been successful, that message to the public? Has the public understood what the president wanted, which was, you know, this is my team. It's sort of not really my fault. It's the team that's incompetent or something like that. Has that been a success for number one?
I don't know yet. Yeah. We need to see the polls, the poll number for that. But I think the response of the public, at least what we can see from the media, is not about how the president is working hard, but about what is the consequences of this anger of the president, which leads to the speculation about the reshuffle of the cabinet, right? And that this kind of speculation is also making sense because people have been asking the president to act decisively on several ministers who are not doing their job well, particularly, for instance, Minister of Health, who was playing down this crisis early on, and also some others of the ministers. Yeah, so the speculation about reshuffle. So I think the second meaning of this video is that president is thinking about doing the reshuffle, but to do so because this cabinet is not all by his choice, he needs to see how the public and also how particularly how the political parties are reacting to that. Because, you know, there is a kind of conventional wisdom that when you are in the crisis, it's not good. When you are still in the crisis, it is not a good policy to change the team, right? Because you need to act decisively and building a new team will not be easy. So, particularly when the cabinets are influenced by the political party. So I think maybe the president really has the plan to do reshuffle, but he needs to convince the political parties or to make the political parties to be ready when he is doing so. That's number two. And number three, I guess, the meaning is that the president is trying to slap his own ministers by using the public. You know, in political communication in presidential system, we have the strategy called going public. So a president, whenever he is doing something and he doesn't get enough support from his internal team, he could go to the public, asking public to put pressure on the politicians or on his cabinets to act better. Yeah. That is also another meaning for that. The two big indicators, medical indicators, health indicators, which is the number of people infected, are still going up, and the number of the fatality are still also going up, not going down. Then the president cannot convince the public that they are doing things rightly. Plus, when the issue of economy is not getting better. Yeah.
So still a long road ahead. But just on that point, so do you expect a reshuffle in the very near future based on, you know, the president's frustration on his cabinet and his own leadership?
I think the issue has been out there. So the president must do the reshuffle, at least for ministers like Minister of Health, at least.
And you think that'll happen in the very near future?
That is hard to say, but I think maybe after or before the Independence Day,
it will happen. Ketua Umum DPP Partai Demokrat Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono melakukan kunjungan perdananya sebagai Ketua Umum dengan bersilaturahmi dengan Ketua Umum Partai Golkar Erlangga Hartarto.
Ketua Umum Partai Demokrat Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono menemui Ketua Umum PKB Muhaimin Iskandar. Sejumlah isu menjadi bahasan kedua petinggi partai
and,
itu.
Termasuk why is Democrat and President Yudhoyono's son Agus Yudhoyono, why is he on a political safari meeting PKB and Golkar leaders? And in talks with several parties, is that looking to join the coalition, or is that for the lobbying, forming coalitions for 2020 local elections?
Two of them, both, yeah. In 2020 local elections, almost every political party needs to have a coalition with other political parties, because in only a few of these 270 local elections, they can nominate their own candidate without having a coalition. So I think it is part of it. Number two is, you know, the speculation about reshuffle is still there. And I think it will be much better for parties like Democrat Party to be part of the power, especially because they have new chairman, Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono, who needs a kind of political asset to be used for his own credibility for running for 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people will see him only as a chair of political party without any experience in government and so on and so forth. Then he will have low bargaining power for 2024.
And will Minister of Finance Sri Mulyani stay in the cabinet for a full term until 2024?
I believe so, because the complaint is not on the Minister of Finance so far. The complaint is on the more technical types of ministers that are directly related to COVID-19 crisis. And I think Sri Mulyani has been serving full term in the first term of Jokowi. And I think Sri Mulyani is one of the team that he trusts very much, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah.
And she's also interested in staying.
Yes, yes, I think so, yeah.
We thank Dr. Jayadi for joining us. Be sure to follow him on Twitter @Jayadi_Hanan. This episode was produced by Sean Corrigan, edited by Risky, and visually designed by Daniel. If you have feedback for this podcast, you can email us at info@IndonesiaIndepth.com or DM us on Instagram @IndonesiaIndepth or on Twitter @IndoIndepth. We have a brand new Bahasa Indonesia podcast called Podcast Start Lab.
Dan saya dengar Ibu Saktia ingin bikin podcast.
Betul sekali. Saya juga tidak menyangka podcast ternyata sudah selama itu di luar negeri. 20 tahun ternyata ya. Yeah,
which goes saya deep into podcast production, storytelling, tips and tricks. Be sure to check it out and subscribe if you like it.
WTF podcast. Thanks for listening. With Mark Maron, dan pertama kali saya mengenal karena sudah masuk YouTube podcastnya dan ada yang episode terkenal sekali karena Presiden Obama kan waktu itu yang. Tapi lebih tahu dari